You're listening to the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Love is a burning thing, and it makes a fiery ring, bound by wild desire. I fell into a ring of fire. I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher. And it burns, 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 the ring of fire, the ring of fire.
Hey, a little Johnny Cash this morning. Welcome. Good morning. It's Freedom Works. I am Paul Molloy. Thank you so very much for joining us on Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show, Tampa Bay's libertarian radio voice. It is Thursday, April the 3rd. Wow, moving along. Thank you for joining us. We're going to be talking in a few minutes with Chris Casey. Chris is the managing director of Windrock Wealth Management. Now, we don't normally have people from wealth management companies, but Chris is also a contributing writer to the Ludwig von Mises Institute. And we do have people from that great economic think tank on from time to time. And Chris has penned a piece called Deflating the Deflation Myth, how deflation is not all that bad a problem, despite what people like even our friend Milton Friedman used to say. So it's going to be an interesting discussion, I think. Stick around for it. And the Supreme Court has struck down limits on political contributions. All kinds of people are screaming in the 5-4 decision, conservative majority holding precedent on it, that it's a victory for the wealthy. But is it really a victory for free speech? Well, we'll talk about that as well. And we're going to have our world-famous Freedom Works Ultimate Top 10 list. If you were with us on the last show, we gave you the top 10 greatest male movie legends. So we're going to, in deference to the women, give the top 10 female movie legends. We'll ask our buddy Lee Clark, who is a movie expert, to tell us who is number one, and he promises not to peek. So all of that.
Peek
also,
at, peek at what? Oh, I thought you meant peek at them. Yeah.
Don't. I know what you're thinking. Okay. I know what you're thinking. Don't.
I bet. Hey, I'm just a movie geek. I'm not.
I am too.
I'm not an expert, but anyway, thanks.
No,
for
the, I'm the same.
Thanks
way.
For the vote, Colin.
Well, you are. You know a lot about it.
Well, it depends. Some things, but but thanks. I appreciate it.
Oh no, that's
okay,
all right.
Yeah,
all right.
Right. I'm a movie
here.
Expert. I'm an expert.
Let's
you're right.
Let's tell everybody who won the Oscar for Best Actor in 1939. Let's show. We're going to show.
1939.
Mm-hmm, we're going to show everybody.
They didn't have the Academy Awards. No, yeah. I'm just kidding. Didn't have them yet. No,
well,
they
well, you can look that one up later, but we'll talk about it later. Anyway.
Well, you know, because you were there, right?
I directed the movie. I played the father of the winner. Anyway, we are here to promote. Oh, you're a very funny man. We're here to promote the libertarian perspective on our program. The idea that the more freedom you have, the happier, the better off, the more fulfilled you're going to be. That's what we are. Look at me. I'm all happy and free and fulfilled. A little weird, but hey, you know. You take
the territory.
You take the good with the bad. Personal liberty, as you were promised, really, in our Declaration of Independence and in our Constitution. Go back and read them. They don't take very long to read. It kind of sets you straight again as to what we're all about in this country. And this kind of liberty is what we believe Washington has been trying to take away. So that's why we do the show. Anyway, glad you're with us. We'd love to have you call in. Maybe you have a thought or a question. We have a toll-free number for you, 866-826-1340. 866-826-1340. And locally, 727-441-3000, if you so choose. You know, Lee, I always wondered, people don't, you know, it used to be a toll-free number was great when you had a high phone bill, but the truth is these days, it comes with a package. You could call anywhere in North America pretty much with any phone plan you can even, I don't think you can get away from that.
Well, I don't know. I think my mom still appreciates them.
Because, yeah, but she has a dial phone. She has a dial phone.
Yeah, she's got a rotary. No, she's got the one you have to click.
Oh, the click phone. Yeah, the one that's on the wall. It's got the separate handle for your ear. Is that the one she has?
Yeah, and you can listen to the other conversations in the neighborhood.
Why are we so giddy this morning?
I don't know. It must be something in the water. They put something in the water.
Yeah, or my coffee. Okay. Anyway, let's move on. You can find out more about this show at this point, if you care to, by visiting our website, thefreedomworks.com. Thefreedomworks.com. You can find out more about our guests who we've had on the show previously. We have a podcast. You can listen to past programs if you'd like and know what they're about. You can find out more about the libertarian philosophy. You can even take a little quiz and find out where in the political spectrum you stand. All of that. TheFreedomWorks.com. Well, yesterday the Supreme Court's decision on campaign political contributions came out, much to the chagrin of some and the delight of others. The Supreme Court, in a 5-4 decision, ruled yesterday that limits on the total amount of money individuals can give to candidates, give to political parties, and give to PACs, you know, political action committees, are unconstitutional. They are saying no limits. Now, this removes the cap on the contributions to these groups. It was set at about $123,000 for this year, which to me is a lot of free speech, if you want to think in those terms. But it does not change the limit on individual contributions for the president, for Congress. Those are currently set at $2,600 per election. Now, I don't know why you can say freedom of speech for one group and still hold caps on the president and Congress at $2,600 per election. That one eludes me. That may have to be revisited. Chief Justice John Roberts announced the decision. And again, it split along conservative and liberal lines. He said, money in politics may at times seem repugnant to some, but so too does much of what the First Amendment vigorously protects. If the First Amendment protects flag burning, funeral protests, and Nazi parades, despite the profound offense such spectacles cause, it surely would protect political campaign speech, despite popular opinion. And he went on to say that the overall limits intrude without justification on citizens' ability to exercise the most fundamental First Amendment activities. Now, Clarence Thomas, another conservative judge, agreed with Roberts in the outcome, but he wrote separately to say he would have gone even further, and he would have wiped away all contribution limits, kind of like what we said at the top of the story. I mean, why is there a limit on what you can give to a president or to Congress? Is that not a limit of your free speech? If an organization wants to give a certain amount of money and they're told they can only give $2,600, I'm not quite sure I understand that. Now, there was Justice Stephen Breyer, who was very upset. He's a liberal on the court. And he wrote for the dissenters. He said, in fact, he took the unusual step of reading his summary, and he said that the, quote, the decision eviscerates our nation's campaign finance laws. He says, the Roberts Court has weakened America's democracy. No, I take that back. That's not what he said. Anna Gallen, the director of MoveOn.org, a liberal think tank, said that. She says it's weakened America's democracy, contributed to a system of legalized bribery by allowing big money to swamp the voices of regular Americans and dramatically alter the outcome of the elections. Well, I think free speech is free speech. And if you were to try to limit, what you do is you limit both sides. You limit unions. You limit groups that are liberal, that want to get together, band together, and lobby on behalf of an issue or a candidate. I think you have to be very careful about that. So, I mean, in the long run, speech is speech, and you cannot separate your desire to help somebody through speech and the financing of your desire to help them. They just go hand in hand. Anyway, we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about another economic issue, deflation, with a gentleman by the name of Chris Casey. So please don't go away.
Every 10 seconds in America, a new business is started. Since 1990, 8 million jobs were created by small business. Every day, more and more people are wanting to be their own boss and are making huge sacrifices to live out their dream. That's why I'm on a mission to celebrate success, spotlighting Tampa Bay small business. The latest tools, strategies, tips, and technologies.
That's on Biz Buzz Tampa Bay, brand new show Saturday morning from 9 until 10 here on Tan Talk.
Good Thursday morning. This is Pryor Smith speaking from Toronto. Here are the news headlines for vacationing Canadians in this the final week of our winter broadcast season. Quebec Premier Pauline Marois is holding out hope for a third referendum on Quebec sovereignty, but she admits it may never happen. And jet traffic in and out of Toronto Island Airport? The debate's going to continue for another year. All of those stories and more, please join me for Canada Calling. For 60 years, a daily update of Canadian news.
Like the lure of speed and the finest in luxury? Then come to the Festivals of Speed presented by Burt Smith Porsche, Sunday, April 6th in downtown St. Petersburg, overlooking the bay. Festivals of Speed is a gathering of the world's most exotic automobiles, motorcycles, watercraft, aircraft, and lifestyle companies. Names like Rolls-Royce, Ferrari, Lamborghini, Porsche, Bentley, and others will all be on display. For more information, visit festivalsofspeed.com or call 352-385-9450. That's festivalsofspeed.com or call 352-385-9450.
You're listening to the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hey, we're back on Freedom Works, and we're delighted to have Chris Casey. He's the managing director of Windrock Wealth Management. He's also a contributing writer for the great Ludwig von Mises Institute, and he has penned an article about deflation. He calls it Deflating the Deflation Myth. And he talks about the fear of deflation, which, you know, both liberals and conservatives, libertarians, non-libertarians have talked about. I know Milton Friedman used to worry about deflation to a large extent. Chris, welcome to Freedom Works. Why do you say that there's a myth about deflation?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me on. I do think it's an important topic that perhaps isn't addressed, well, certainly isn't addressed correctly in the media. And it is something that's in the news frequently, especially with whether it's Japan, which is actually experiencing or has experienced some deflation, whether it's the U.S., which has the current Fed chairman terrified of deflation, as well as her predecessors. And then, of course, you have the ECB, which is in the news right now talking about how they have the single mandate and it is to have a stable price level, so they're terrified of deflation.
The ECB, would you let our listeners know what that stands for?
Oh, sure, the European Central Bank.
Right, okay.
They're in the news frequently right now discussing deflation and how they're scared of it, and they're trying to increase the price level throughout Europe. So it's an important topic, and I think it's one that's misunderstood. You know, deflation not only is not something that, you know, it's certainly not something that should be feared, and I think history proves that. In the 19th century, for America, we had extended periods of fantastic economic growth. And meanwhile, the price level dropped 50% at times over a long period of time. So it's not something that should be feared. The other point, which is not in the article that you reference, what I think is equally important, is that deflation is actually an excellent mechanism to correct recessions and to speed the recovery process for an economy. And the reason that is because the more a currency is appreciating, so the more your dollar is becoming worth more and more relative to goods and services, the more likely you are to save more. And to the extent people save more, unlike conventional wisdom or certainly what the members of the Federal Reserve believe, the greater savings speeds a recovery process in recession and helps restore an economy, create a healthy economy, and set us up for the best prospects going forward to really grow.
Well, why did economists on both sides, like Milton Friedman and currently Paul Krugman and John Maynard Keynes, why to them was it such a big boogeyman?
You know, it's a big boogeyman for both both of those parties, but for completely different reasons. The Keynesians look at this and say, and there's some great quotes by Krugman, I think I used one in the article, they look at it and say, well, if you're going to have deflation, if you have prices that are falling, people are going to put off spending. And if they keep putting off spending, then, you know, they're a consumption-based model. They believe if you don't have the consumption, you're not going to have the growth. So they're worried about deflation from the standpoint of it preventing consumption, right? You know, the purchase of consumer goods by the populace.
But if the price comes down,
correct,
or deflates, wouldn't that be an incentive for people to buy it?
According to the law of demand, of course. But the idea is that they expect it to continue to go down. So, you know, maybe tomorrow it's down X percent. Well, 6 months from now, it may be down even more. If people assume that, they believe they'll hold off their purchase.
Oh, okay.
Even longer.
Like a house or something.
Oh, anything. You know, it could be electronics, could be the new computer. They believe any purchase that someone would do, they would hold off on. Which obviously isn't correct, because you can't forego consumption forever. At some point, you need to have that good or something.
Well, it's like the stock market, isn't it? I mean, you see the stock market is going one way or the other, and you hold off making the decision because you think it will continue to go in that direction, but all of a sudden it stops, right?
It's somewhat analogous to that, yes.
Okay.
Now, Friedman has a completely different reason in the monetarist for fearing deflation. They pinpoint deflation as the primary cause of the Great Recession and for business cycles in general. So Milton Friedman actually would call the Great Depression the Great Contraction. And he has a book that was published in 1963 called U.S. Monetary History of the United States with Anna Schwartz, in which he does these case studies and looks at periods in U.S. history and tries to, through inference of the data, blame the contraction of the money supply, which did contract, by the way, in the Great Depression, mm-hmm. probably by a third. He blames that as the cause of the Great Depression. So both Keynesians and monetarists look at it for different reasons, but are equally scared of it.
Well, you know, it's very interesting how that works. I mean, to the layman, if they see that the money that is in a deflation, they kind of think that's good. You know, I don't know. They seem to think that they'll be able to spend more money, and the value of their money is more than it was before. I guess that's just a selfish individual look at it.
Well, that's how I look at it. I mean, I'd certainly, it'd be great if the money in my wallet was effectively appreciating as I was holding off on spending. That's a great, it's a great perspective.
Now, the Federal Reserve Chairman, is it Janet Yellen? Is that her name now?
Correct.
Okay. Where does she stand? It seems like she's going to hold on. Let me ask you, what is her philosophy about the interest rates? I just want to tie it into inflation and deflation. Where does she stand now in terms of what she might do regarding the interest rate on money loaning?
Sure. Well, Janet Yellen, first of all, just her background. I mean, she's a Berkeley graduate. She's considered the most dovish member of the Federal Reserve in some time, meaning she's not worried about inflation. She's open to it. And I think that's a correct assessment. In fact, I think she will be perhaps one of the most damaging Federal Reserve.
So she would allow the interest rate to go up, do you think?
Well, no, she actually prefers interest rates to go down.
Well, right.
She would like to push them down as far as possible.
Okay, so she'd hold them down. All right.
Right. In fact, she has a famous quote from a few years back, and I can't remember the source, but she said, listen, if I could push interest rates to negative territory, I would.
Okay.
And so that's how dovish she is. She wishes to expand the money supply as fast as possible, as large as possible, in her mistaken belief that it will somehow help the U.S. economy.
So does that make her a she also feels that deflation is a bad thing?
She does.
Okay.
She is equally scared of it. In fact, she's been quoted several times over the last couple of years as saying, hey, if you have deflation, it creates what she believes is some type of economic death spiral where people stop mm-hmm. spending, and that causes other repercussions and eventually the whole economy tanks. So she is terribly concerned about deflation.
We're talking, by the way, with Chris Casey. He has a very interesting article for the Ludwig von Mises Institute called Deflating the Deflation Myth. And Chris is the managing director at Windrock Wealth Management. So where are we going, do you think, Chris, with this whole situation? I mean, is the economy because we've been holding down interest rates, has that been a bad thing? Is it slowing the recovery? How do you feel about the whole Federal Reserve approach right now?
Sure. Well, look, I guess what you can say, I could back up, because what the Federal Reserve is doing right now is merely a continuation of their actions since the 2008 Great Recession. So that Great Recession was met with what I call a troika of trouble. You have massive bailouts, you have massive deficits, and you have just tremendous printing of money. All three of those measures are the exact opposite of what you want to do to get out of recession. And so that's, it's the worst possible medicine that they're administrating. So right now, they're continuing that policy. I mean, while they're, nominally supposedly reducing QE3, what I anticipate happening is that eventually, whether it's later this year or 2015, we're going to have a serious economic recession, or perhaps maybe they'll be preceded by some significant downturn in the equity markets, the stock market. If that happens, I think the Federal Reserve will go right back to their plan of attack that they've been using since 08, and we'll see an increase in the money supply, maybe QE4. I don't know if they're actually going to call it that. But somehow they're going to continue to increase the money supply, whether it's outright purchases, whether it's pushing down rates even further, possibly. They have a couple mechanisms they could still pursue, but I think they're going to just keep going with their current playbook.
What would you do if you were in their shoes?
Well, it's kind of funny that the Federal Reserve presents itself as this guardian of stable prices and, stable interest rates, or reasonable interest rates, I think is what they're charged with. And in fact, they're the only ones that can distort that. They're the only ones that can, in fact, do the opposite. So what I would do, I think the government shouldn't have anything to do with the money supply, much as it shouldn't have anything to do with many other areas of the economy. In fact, it's perhaps the most critical area of the economy that should not be tampered with, or for that reason it should not be tampered with. So, a lot of I adhere to the Austrian School of Economics, which some of your listeners may be familiar with. Ron Paul certainly was a supporter.
Right, right.
And it's not appropriate to say that we're advocates of the gold standard per se. What really we're advocates of is the free market determining what money should be. So I would be in favor of government getting out of the money business. Now, whether that's you have some kind of transitory phase where they just increased money supply at X percent. I mean, that's what Milton Friedman wanted. He wanted a stable increase in the money supply so people could appropriately plan.
Mm-hmm.
Or you do it sooner. Either way, that would be a good thing. So first and foremost, it's just like a physician treating a patient. Do no wrong. And to the extent you're causing harm by increasing the money supply, by bailing out failed entities, stop doing that. That's the first thing that they should do.
And eliminate the Federal Reserve, much like what Ron Paul talked about?
Well, I think that makes absolute sense. I mean, it sounds shocking when, we say it in today's day and age, but let's not forget that we didn't have a Federal Reserve for a large part of this country's history. And in fact, central banking didn't exist worldwide for a long time. The only reason to have a central bank is so that they could properly coordinate inflating the money supply among various banks. And there's no, people will say, well, society's more complex now, technology's more complex, et cetera. That's absolutely true. But those aren't arguments in favor of central banking. In fact, I think they have nothing to do with it. So eliminating a central bank, yes, I think that's that would certainly be beneficial.
I mean, we've all grown up with having the Federal Reserve, play around with the interest rate. But I've often wondered why it needed to be there. It seems like it's just like any other nanny state kind of program. It almost interferes with what people really want to do with their money.
Well, it's amazing that people think that the Federal Reserve is somehow endowed with this insight,
right,
into what the appropriate level of the money supply should be. I mean, it's what F.A. Hayek, noted Austrian economist, when he accepted the Nobel Prize in economics, called the pretense of knowledge. They have no way of knowing this, and just like they would have no way of knowing how many bananas should be in the economy. So for the same reason, the Federal Reserve should not be involved, or any entity should be involved in dictating the amount of dollars in an economy.
I mean, Janet Yellen, to many people, is more powerful than Obama, the most powerful person on the planet.
Well, that's been said about a lot of Fed chairpersons, and I think we saw that most notably in 2008 recession. I mean, they were able to act unilaterally without oversight, and what some would argue is exceeding their mandates in their actions. So in a lot of ways, they are more powerful. And it goes back down to the Federal Reserve is the only entity that can really create inflation and can create recessions. These things don't exist as part of the free market. They're not part of capitalism. They are created and derived from intervention with the free market and capitalism.
So, and I'm sorry to interrupt you. Would depressions and the like occur without the Federal Reserve's involvement? If we took it away, would they, or would those things be blips? You know what I mean?
Sure. I would argue they would not occur. And you know, if I think all you need to do is look at history to agree with that, or to come to your own conclusion.
I mean, we had depressions before the Federal Reserve in 1913, right? We had depressions in the 19th century, or at least they were called such, right?
We certainly did. And what has been mistaken, though, is people think, well, the Federal Reserve has only been around since 1913. If you didn't have it before then, how could you account for recessions that happened? And the most notable thing that, here's a great travesty of history, is that the same time during the 19th century when depressions and recessions first appeared, we had the Industrial Revolution going full-born.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, a lot of economists and people associated the free market and capitalism with inherently having these recessions and depressions. What they overlook is that the same time period, we had either the advent of central banking and fiat currency. So fiat currency, just for some of your listeners, is currency that is mandated by the government. So by law, it's acceptable, and it has no alternative value. So it's something besides gold and silver.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you look at the history of business cycles, they didn't really appear before the 19th century. They were non-existent. They may be what would be called business fluctuations, where you have a war or the king takes a bunch of taxes and the economy goes down momentarily, but it wasn't recurring and it wasn't deep. And it wasn't until the 19th century in the U.S. where, yes, you did not have a Federal Reserve, but you had an inflation of the money supply, whether it's through banks that are issuing fiat currencies themselves, or most notably in the Civil War, the central government started issuing
right.
greenbacks, which were currencies unbacked by gold or silver. So that argument is unfortunately just an accident of history as far as timing.
So your argument would be that depressions and long recessions would not be in the cards had it not been for intervention, the arbitrary artificial intervention.
Absolutely correct.
Okay. Ah, very interesting. Well, Chris, I want to thank you so very much for joining us. I found this to be really enjoyable talking and listening to you. Now, you're the managing director of Windrock Wealth Management. Here's your chance. You want to say anything about that?
Sure. Well, I'm a managing director there. I mean, there's a number of managing directors. We are a wealth management advisory firm, and so we manage money for wealthy individuals anywhere from $1 million in net worth and up. And I think a couple things make us unique, and one that I'll point out is that, you know, we have a real perspective on the economy. So if you go to a lot of these firms, will tell you, well, you can't time the market, you just have to be in it, and who can predict when we're going to have a recession or inflation? But I think you can, and it just takes a grounding in economics. And so we do try to protect our clients from what we see as coming down the pike, which is could be, well, we think significant inflation, certainly recessions down the road. And so we invest them accordingly. And so I think we're fairly unique in that aspect.
And again, your clientele, basically wealthy investors, did you say, a million or more?
Yes, wealthy okay. individuals, anywhere from $1 million in net worth to we have clients that have several hundred million dollars in net worth.
Okay, well, that will exclude me, but my colleague Lee Clark will be making a phone call.
Yeah, I'll need to get your number.
Well, thanks for having me on.
My pleasure.
I did appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Chris. The very best to you. Really enjoyed it, and maybe down the road we'll talk again.
Great. Take care, guys.
All right. That was Chris Casey. We're going to take a short break, my friends. Johnny Cash is going to let you talk to you for a moment. Then we'll be back.
Mama, I guess you heard I got married in Tennessee. I got a blue-eyed girl who thinks the world of me.
Imus in the morning.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
So I say to Carly, where's my main sheet? You know, the stuff that I go by.
Where do you guys hear this, by the way?
And she says, don't you have it?
And?
So I said, yeah, I have it. I'm just asking you where. Obviously.
And you blow up at her. You got angry.
No, I didn't get angry. I just think it's an idiotic question.
What was the answer?
Well, I did have it, but I didn't know where it was.
Bingo.
My point was that I didn't know I had it.
Right.
So if I say, where is it? That means I don't know where it is.
Right, I know.
So her question would not be, don't you have it, when I say I don't have it.
But you had it.
Well, I ask where it is. That's not the point.
I know.
Well, what is the right thing?
Wait a second.
Did you have it?
No,
did
I didn't know I had
but
it.
But did you? Can you answer me one question? Did you have it?
I didn't know I had it.
But just answer, please. Did you have it?
No, I didn't. I didn't know where it was.
Oh, man.
So I had to find it. So I didn't know that I had it. That's the key word there. I realize this may be a little difficult to comprehend, but so right. Then I say to Nat.
Oh, gosh.
Right.
Who turned her mic on, by the way?
Wasn't you?
No.
Wow. Oh, God. So you said to
Nat.
Nat,
there's cold air blowing on me. He said, well, from where? Well, how would I know that? Wherever the cold air blows from, that's where it's blowing from. I mean,
nobody should answer. No one should just say anything.
Just say, I'll fix it.
Catch Imus in the Morning right here on the stations of the Tantalk Network.
Stamkos. Hedman. Bishop. Will Lord Stanley be the next name you're cheering for? The Tampa Bay Lightning. Be the Thunder.
Charge to the playoffs with the Lightning. Playoff tickets go on sale Friday at 10 a.m. at the McDonald's ticket office, Ticketmaster.com, or by calling 800-745-3000. Tampa Bay Lightning. Be the Thunder.
You're listening to the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Summertime, naturally high by chopping wood for next winter's fire. Saving money for the county fair.
Hey, we're back. Freedom Works, Paul Molloy.
Hey, Paul.
Lee Clark
on
here.
The movie thing.
Yeah.
Can I try to answer that question? Because it occurred to me, and I did not peek.
No, I know you wouldn't peek, but can we wait until we do the top 10?
Was it? Well, is it?
That would ruin it.
No, it won't.
But here, I'm
all excited.
I'm good. Let me. It's funny you bring it up right now because I was just going to tell you.
Yes.
I watched last night. A movie called American Hustle.
Oh, right. Good. Great.
Did you see that movie?
Yes, I did.
I did not recognize Christian Bale.
Oh.
Yeah, he was the lead. I thought he did a wonderful job.
He must have. If you didn't recognize him, then
he didn't. That's the second movie where I didn't recognize the star.
Well, he's a very good actor.
Yes.
He's a very good actor.
And no question. I didn't even recognize him. It was the same with that other Oscar-nominated movie where the best actor won.
This year?
Yeah.
Which one was it?
McConaughey.
Oh, McConaughey.
Matthew McConaughey. Yeah.
Well, he did that.
And
it
was the same thing. Yeah, but I mean, I didn't recognize either one of them. I knew who they were. But
right.
What I mean is I didn't recognize the way they looked. They made such a change in their looks.
Yeah. Well, Bale must have put on weight.
He did. He was. They showed him with a. Unless that was some sort of a computerized.
It was in his face too, wasn't it? Kind of.
His face was full. He had a big stomach. They made a point of showing that. Yeah.
And he had to. I guess we never saw him without a shirt, or did we? I don't know. I don't remember.
There was a point where we saw his stomach.
That's
yeah.
right, because he was at the swimming pool.
Anyway, for those people that don't know what we're talking about, American Hustle is the story of a couple. That get together and engineer a very interesting con game, and then the authorities get involved, and there's all kinds of things. And it was based on what I remember back in the 70s was that ABSCAM investigation by the government. Yeah.
ABSCAM. Band-Aids are always good for those.
They are. But if you pull them off too quickly, what's left is what you call an ABSCAM.
And on another note, you know the thing about American Hustle is like the opening scene where he's
doing the comb over.
He's
supplying a hairpiece with glue and stuff.
And it's so repulsive.
Oh, it is.
My first shot, I cannot watch. This is.
Did you know? You knew who the stars were, so you knew right away it was him.
It was Christian Bale. And there's a great clip, and I don't know if we could play it because it's so profanity laced, but it's Christian Bale freaking out on set because somebody got in his line of sight during the scene.
Was that from that movie?
No, it was from a couple years ago.
Yeah, he was involved in another movie when that occurred. Right.
And it's just hysterically funny. Yeah. He's just, he
gets into it. He gets into the moment and the mood, and he doesn't need the distraction, apparently.
Yeah, I mean, he apparently is super,
super wired.
Yeah.
He's really wired.
Don't mess with him
when I'm in. There's another actor that's like that, the Irish actor.
Not Sean Penn. He's not Irish.
No.
I know the guy you're talking about. The suit, the party.
He was in The Last of the Mohicans and a whole bunch of movies.
Can't think of his name.
Anyway,
a very good actor.
My Left Foot, remember?
Daniel Day-Lewis. Oh, okay.
That's who I meant. Daniel Day-Lewis. He's another guy. I think he gets very much into his character.
Yeah.
And when he becomes his character, and he's not the only actor that does it. They actually, even John Wayne did it in a movie that he played a very grumpy man way back. Grumpy man is no, he was a, he had a psycho nature to him in it. She Wore a Yellow Ribbon. And he actually assumed a persona, an angry persona, and he didn't want people to upset that. He would be grouchy to them
on
between
set.
Takes. Yeah,
he would stay in character.
John Wayne. I mean, you just never think of him being like that. But apparently, these actors need to get into a certain frame of reference and stay there for a while.
There are certain actors that are known for doing. Sean Penn is one. He'll stay in character.
Yeah, right.
Even during the break, and then people go, "Uh-oh, it's not Sean. It's the character."
I think he stayed in character and gone on and done television and radio interviews. Seems like he's still in that character.
Yeah.
Kind of mean, menacing kind of guy, right?
Yeah, and he married that gorgeous actress, the one that, I'll think of her name. But,
Madonna. He married Madonna.
Well, there was Madonna, but that was
that was a long time ago, though.
That was like a big 3-week mistake.
Yes.
Anyway,
well, anyway.
I'll find out her name.
Anyway, American Hustle, and I did want to mention that because I know that you... And I don't know, just the whole concept of conning and money and everything. We've been talking about the money supply. And but it was extremely I would recommend people see the movie. They all did a wonderful job. I thought the lady that played his wife was particularly good.
Jennifer, names are
escaping. I'm worse than you are.
She's huge right now.
But she was so good in that movie. I thought she just did you didn't know if she was really intense. There were scenes where she just was, her character was so intelligent. She just knew what was going on. And then there were other scenes and you thought she was a little dippy. So it was a very interesting character as well.
She's amazingly tough. She, when they did, she was working with Bradley Cooper in another movie, whose, of course, name it, I have forgotten, but it won an Academy Award. And, anyway, they would say to her, she would be goofing off, making jokes between takes, and then she'd go do a take, and she would, so nail it. Everybody would be worried if she could get the scene. She would go in.
She'd get right into the character?
Totally nail it, and everybody on set was just, whoa. I mean, really impressed. Everybody, whoa, this chick is, scary good.
She was really good in that role, yeah.
And she's very young, and she's hysterically funny.
If you I can see the humor that she might have, yeah.
I mean, she'll have you LOL, I mean, for real.
Really?
Out loud, yeah. Seriously.
Well, from the interesting cinematic look at money and economics, we can swing over to something else that has to do with the Supreme Court and the Constitution, and that is... That momentum, believe it or not, is building behind what would be an unprecedented effort to amend our Constitution. And it would be through the states. There is a little-known provision in the Constitution. It gives states, rather than Congress, the power to initiate changes. Now, we've heard of the term constitutional convention. And Article 5 of our Constitution provides two ways to amend our Constitution. The first is two-thirds of both the House and the Senate to approve a resolution. It then goes to the states, and three-quarters of the states have to ratify it. That is the way all of our amendments to the Constitution have been added. But the Founding Fathers also had an alternative. It said that if two-thirds of the states demanded a meeting, Congress shall call a convention for proposing amendments. Now, it's very hard to get any state and its legislature to agree with another state. But it's starting to gain popularity, and it got a big boost last week when Michigan and its legislature endorsed the concept. Now, by some counts, Michigan becomes the 34th state to endorse the concept of getting together for a constitutional convention, because that would be two-thirds of our 50 states. So in the wake of all of this, Republican Duncan Hunter, he's from California, has pressed John Boehner, the Speaker of the House, to determine whether they got enough states right now to be on the threshold of a constitutional convention. I got a hunch that neither the Republicans or the Democrats in either House or Senate want it. And a lot of people, even in the state legislatures that may have gotten the majorities, are afraid of it. Because when you call a constitutional convention, all hell can break loose. You don't have to stay on a particular topic. Once you're in there in a convention, you can start changing all kinds of things. The one thing that apparently all of these states seem to be, these 34 states seem to be in accordance with, is that they would like to attach a balanced budget amendment to the Constitution, which would force our Congress to only spend as much as it technically takes in every year. This is the same thing that almost every state governor is has to live by, every state legislature. You gotta only spend what you take in. And of course, states don't have the power to print money. The federal government does. So they can play games even with a balanced budget amendment. If they print enough money, they can say, you know, they get around things like that. But the question is whether or not we should call a constitutional convention. Very, very, very interesting. And I think with the way things are going in our country, and so many of the states, particularly the, I guess you would call it the conservative states, states like Texas, parts of California, there had been talk about secession. I mean, I hate to say that word, but, you know, only a handful of people, but like enough of a handful of maybe important enough people that it starts getting ink in the newspapers. So you never know where you're going to go with a constitutional convention. But if two-thirds of the state have applied, apparently the ball is in the court, is in Congress's court to call the convention. But this article, Article 5, is rather vague about just exactly how to do it. Now, again, our founding fathers left a lot of things intentionally vague and subject to some interpretation. And it's unclear whether technically 34 states have applied. And you never know. If we went back and said, let's take a head count now, some of the 34 states might rescind their request for a convention. Now, there have been some that already have rescinded, then they've reapplied. It depends, too, on the makeup of each of the legislatures. I mean, when they change, so does the opinion on whether or not to hold a constitutional convention. Here's an example. Alabama, in 1988, had a request on the books for a constitutional convention, but in that year, they pulled or rescinded that request. But in 2011, they again applied for a constitutional convention. Florida did the same thing. in 2010. Louisiana, they rescinded in 1990. But since then, lawmakers have tried several times, unsuccessfully, to reinstate. So, and there's disagreement by constitutional scholars, too, as whether or not there are currently enough states that would like to call a convention or whether there is not. So I think there's not even a process in place to determine it. But I would think that it might fall upon the Speaker of the House in particular to take account officially on a particular day of each of the 50 states and see how many might indeed be interested in a constitutional convention. I don't think you're going to see that because I don't think the Congress wants to release that kind of power to state legislatures, but it is indeed in the Constitution. It is. And we're going to stay on this story. In fact, we're going to get some, let's get some experts on, perhaps from the Cato Institute, to talk about the Constitutional Convention and whether or not it's a real possibility. Anyway, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back. You're going to find out who are the top 10 greatest female movie legends.
In the morning.
The Blondes are coming up, but before we get to that, let's go back in the green room, and I think Dice Clay is there. Morning, Dice.
Oh, I'm over here now.
Okay.
What's the deal with this blonde on blonde? You say blonde on blonde, I'm thinking pay-per-view. But no, it's a cat fight.
Oh.
Hey, honey, you went to Harvard. Can't you think of something to stun Attila the mom for a couple of seconds so she'll shut up long enough so we can all get to the radio and turn it off before she starts up again? We know, Ava Braun, everybody who don't agree with you is an idiot. Everything's poison and we're all going to die. Unfortunately, just not fast enough so long as you're flapping your yapper. Here's what I don't get. Deirdre's a well-educated, sophisticated woman, and she wears dresses from the Larry Flint Hustler collection. The French think that perfect breast fits in a champagne glass. I think punch bowl. I know you wear that stuff around the house to make sure the old man still has a pulse, but you come here and sit on the set like Villanova Dolly Parton, and poor old Lisa's sitting next to you looking like a 12-year-old boy.
Relax.
Hang on, Grandma. Relax. I don't want to break your hip.
Oh.
Hey, Deirdre, you don't got to try that hard. There ain't no prenup. So just take a chill pill and wait it out. But if you want the money now, make them chase you around the bed. Oh!
Catch Imus in the Morning right here on the stations of the Tantalk Network.
Every 10 seconds in America, a new business is started. Since 1990, 8 million jobs were created by small business. Every day, more and more people are wanting to be their own boss and are making huge sacrifices to live out their dream. That's why I'm on a mission to celebrate success, spotlighting Tampa Bay small business. The latest tools, strategies, tips, and technologies.
That's on Biz Buzz Tampa Bay, brand new show Saturday morning from 9 until 10 here on Tan Talk.
You're listening to the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hey, we're back on Freedom Works. Paul Molloy, thank you very much for joining us today, Thursday, April the 3rd. Boy, time flies, doesn't it, when you're having fun? Well, in North Carolina, possible voter fraud going on there. Elections Director Kim Strock told state lawmakers in North Carolina at an oversight hearing yesterday her staff has identified 765 registered North Carolina voters who appear to have voted in two different states during the last presidential election. She said their first, last names, their birth dates, and the last four digits of their Social Security numbers appear to be the same. Well, I would say that would be a slight indication. And they voted in two different states. Well, they like to vote. Come on. I mean, if you like to vote, I always say that you indulge your hobby, right? You should
just
indulge.
Vote as often as you possibly
can. I'd go to every state, find a precinct, and wander in and say, "Hi, I'm just happy to be here," and do what you do best. You know,
I love you. Can I vote? in your wonderful little town here?
Well, I don't know. You know, a lot of Democrats have talked about what they call voter suppression, which is the opposite side. We got a lot of that here in Florida. They call it voter suppression, while the other side says it's pulling out an ID card to show that you are who you are when you come in to vote. So what some people are calling voter suppression, others are saying voter identification. It's a very interesting topic. And I would suggest that there's not too much suppression from what I can see of people. I've never seen it, actually, where people, legitimate voters, have been stopped from voting. I do, though, think that there's been a lot of people that have wandered in and, quite frankly, are not who they appear to be when they vote. So here we go in North Carolina. Now, they have what they call the zombie vote. Do you know, Lee Clark, what the zombie vote is?
Is that dead people voting?
Yes, sir. That's exactly right. And in Chicago, where I came from, we prided ourselves on how many people that were currently buried in the various cemeteries had an opportunity to once again cast their ballot from beyond. So they're called the Walking Dead. And according to one of the North Carolina Republican congressmen, he says, now we've got the voting dead in North Carolina. And, well, we'll see where all of that goes. I know, I used to say this all the time, the people that seem to complain the most about voter fraud tended to be, at least when I would read it in the newspapers, people that tended to be more Democratic. However, I used to think all of the big cities where so much vote fraud went on, and I will start with my own city of Chicago, tended to be in the Democratic precincts because most of the big cities are Democratic. And, you know, so here we go in North Carolina. I don't know where that will go, but it continues to be an issue. Well, I think it's time that we get to what everybody in the world is anticipating, and that is our top 10 greatest movie legends of all time in the female category. Are we ready? Listen, now you can cut the tension with a knife, as far as I'm concerned. I happen to know who the top 25 are because I have it right here in front of me.
This is by IFC.
This is from the American Film Institute, AFI.
AFI.
And they are, here is the criteria. You have to have finished your career.
Okay.
Now, you could have died, which means you indeed have finished your career. Or it could be like...
Or you're just finished in the business.
Yeah, like Kirk Douglas, who's about 114 years of age now, and his career is pretty much over, although I'm still waiting for him to do a Visa card commercial. But go ahead.
Oh, he recently made a couple years ago, he made a film with his son, Michael.
Yes, he did, and I'm kind of jesting. I actually have great respect for his abilities and who he is and all of that.
Me amazing. Too.
He's an amazing man.
Me too.
And he had a wonderful career. And he is in the men's list. However, he's not in the top 10. Kirk Douglas.
Well, now, what about that Academy Award question? Isn't that different from the poll
yes.
that you asked me?
That is
so
correct. Shall we start
that?
With that?
Can
let's
I
start with the
just
yeah.
get that out of the way.
Let's first of all right. let's reintroduce the question.
Right.
And the question is, who won Best Actor Award, Best Oscar, Best Actor Oscar
oh, no.
for 1939?
Well, I didn't know it was Best Actor. Was it Clark Gable?
No.
It wasn't Jimmy Stewart.
No.
Okay, I'm out of wait. No, I don't know.
That's all right.
I have no idea.
First of all, 1939 brought us perhaps Hollywood's
Wait.
Greatest no. movies. There were
the,
one classic
wasn't the
movie
Wizard
after.
Of Oz, 1939?
Yes, sir.
So what, was it a guy in The Wizard of Oz?
No, sir.
Okay, see?
But there were many other great movies, including a movie called Goodbye, Mr. Chips.
Oh, Goodbye, Mr. Chips.
That's a huge...
That's, Goodbye, Mr. Chips.
Mm-hmm.
And would it... No.
Goodbye, Mr. Chips...
Oh, sure, yeah.
Produced the greatest, the best actor.
They did a
winner.
Remake later, didn't
yes,
they?
Yes, they did.
Okay. Say, I don't know who was in the
it's
old
It's all right. His name was Robert Donat. And he
it was.
Not.
Was it really?
Yes, it was. He was the winner.
Donat.
D-O-N-A-T, Donat.
Donat.
Yeah.
Donat do that.
Donat try to act like him. But he won in 1939 playing Mr. Chips.
They had a nickname for him, Duncan.
They did indeed,
Duncan Donut.
Yes,
yeah,
they did.
I remember that.
I think we better get on. Here are the top 10 women greatest movie legends of all time. Number 10, Joan Crawford. Yes, 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 the very bitchy Joan Crawford did make it, and she would be very happy. However, she did not make it any higher than 10, but that's pretty good. Number 9.
She'd be pretty upset about that.
She'd want to be number 1. Number 9, Marlene Dietrich.
She's pretty cool.
She's pretty cool, famous German actress. And I very understandably, the number 9. Number 8.
Cold.
You mentioned The Wizard of Oz.
Judy.
Judy Garland, number 8. Greatest female movie legend of all time. Number 7. Elizabeth Taylor.
Okay.
Hey, nobody can argue with Elizabeth Taylor. She certainly is among the greatest.
Well, Paul, I mean, people, tastes of... I don't know. I don't think she's as hot as everybody makes. Well, she is pretty hot back in the day. There's some really good photographs.
We'll take your opinions under consideration, Mr. Lee Clark.
Okay.
As to whether or not Elizabeth Taylor should be one of the top 10. All right.
Like in about the
I would say
she was looking pretty hot.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I think so too.
But as a kid, I don't know.
I know that you're going to agree with the next one. Number 6, Marilyn Monroe.
Here's another one I don't
know.
Never understood.
Okay.
Don't
get,
but she's dumb, very interesting.
But she was the persona of the dumb blonde.
But she was so dumb that she started her own production company.
She was never dumb. Never.
Actresses
to never
start
dumb.
Her own production company.
Nobody got to that point in their lives by being dumb.
Who starts her own production company? And she married guys like Arthur Miller. I mean, how dumb could she have been? Right?
And Joe DiMaggio. She must have liked baseball.
Yeah.
Number 5. I want to be alone. Who is that?
Oh, yeah, that's Greta Garbo.
Greta Garbo.
She's real hot. Unfortunately, they started using sound in movies, and that was the end of her career.
Oh, no, it wasn't the end of her career. Absolutely not. In fact, she had a very seductive voice. She had that that sort of German sound to it. I can't remember if she came from Germany or not, Greta Garbo.
I think she was from further north, like Sweden or something.
Yeah, I think you're right. I take it back. She was from Sweden. Right.
Okay,
yeah.
I was
Greta
right
Garbo
once
was from
today.
Sweden.
I've been right.
Oh, you know more about that than
me. Because I had a couple, you know.
Anyway, Greta Garbo certainly deserves to be on there. Number 4. Number 4. Another one from Sweden.
Oh, hold up. No, wait.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, Ingrid Bergman.
Yes, yeah. Ingrid Bergman. In one of the most beloved movies of all time, Casablanca.
Casablanca.
And she's number 4. Number 3.
We'll always have Paris, Paul.
We'll always have Paris.
You know, no matter
there
what.
There are so many cool lines from that movie. Number 3. Audrey Hepburn.
Okay.
Yeah, sure. Audrey Hepburn. A terrific actress and in many different kinds of movies. She could do all kinds of movies. When she played that blind woman...
Wait Until Dark.
Wait Until Dark. And then she, she danced with Fred Astaire. She did it all. And I think deservedly so, number 3. Number 2. I'm going to ask you, Lee Clark. There's 2 left. And we did this with the men. Who do you think it might be?
The greatest. We haven't. Ava Gardner hasn't been mentioned yet.
No, she hasn't.
But she's not one of the two, is what you're saying.
I didn't say that.
Okay, well, there's Ava Gardner. Man, you know, I don't know. There's Ava Gardner and...
Well, I know
Grace Kelly, my God. Grace Kelly, Paul. If only, you know, she were here today, because, I mean, I'm nuts over Grace Kelly.
Well, Grace Kelly was absolute. So was Alfred Hitchcock.
Yeah, well, he was literally
He had her
nuts.
In 2 different movies. Well, he was nuts. Grace Kelly made number 13. And I think good, but you got to remember her career was very short. She only made about 5 movies. She only made about 5 movies.
Goofball over in Monaco.
Lee, she only made about 5 movies.
And she had a stellar career for 5 movies.
So anyway, number 2.
Okay, obviously I don't know.
Betty Davis, man.
Betty Davis.
Betty Davis. I knew she'd be up there. But
I don't
Betty
know
Davis.
What the attraction was.
Oh, she was a great actress. That's the attraction.
Okay. Now there's only one left.
There's only one. You want to guess?
It can't be Ava Gardner.
It is not. Ava Gardner did make the list.
I wasn't.
But she made it. She just made it. She was number 25.
Okay. Catherine Hepburn.
That's it. Number 1.
Cha-ching. Hey, wait. Okay, let me say it again. Audrey Hepburn, Paul? No, not, is it, not Audrey Hepburn. Catherine Hepburn.
Yes, sir. It's Catherine Hepburn, the other Hepburn. The older sister.
The other Hepburn.
Anyway, hey, we got to run. We're way over. But thank you for joining us. We'll be back tomorrow. Freedom Works. I'm Paul Molloy.